Hello, Cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 154 of Cyclocross Radio. On today's show, my good friend Elliot Caldwell, the Cheat, is joining me from Georgia, from Athens, to talk about the upcoming Cyclocross weekend, which is GoCross in Roanoke, Virginia, the first UCI race in the world for 2019-2020 season. We're going to be there. We preview it on this show, along with getting into a little bit of Rochester, a little bit of the European scene. You know, it's hard to just talk with somebody like Elliot, who's got a great depth of knowledge for cyclocross and cycling, and not sort of tangent off into other areas. So that's what we do, and hopefully that's what you expect from this show. So it's no different. That's coming up just in a minute. Before we get there, I want to tell you all about Whoop and the Whoop 3.0 band. If you've listened to the last couple episodes, you know I have one. It's actually been in really good. Somebody left a tweet out there saying that they don't need a wearable to tell them that they're not getting enough sweet sleep. I was already getting to that. It was Scott Thompson. Thanks, Scott. I'm going to use you as an example. It's you don't need it to tell you that you don't get enough sleep. You already know that, but maybe this is the nudge you need. You're an analytical guy. I know a lot of the listeners are as well. Once you see that analysis and you see that, hey, I'm doing all these intervals every day, I'm getting ready for cyclocross season, and if I were to just fix that one variable, I'd perform even better when I was on my bike. In your instance, Scott, I'm sorry, I'm just dogging you on this whole thing. You wouldn't be swearing at yourself during every interval because you'd be performing better after knowing this easy step to take care of yourself, to recover. And you're able to know when that is necessary through the Whoop 3.0 band. So Scott, just for you and all the viewers out there like you, put in CX Hairs at whoop.com and you're going to get 15% off either 12 months or 18 months of a subscription. Cool thing about the Whoop band as opposed to other wearables like my Apple Watch, which I also love, is that it has a 5-day charge, so you can charge it and it'll be ready to go for 5 days. The other thing on top of that is the little charger sits on top of the band, and you can just walk around the house with it, so you don't even have to take it off. You'll lose zero data. You won't lose any of that 100 times per second, 24/7 monitoring of your heart rate, because you won't have to take it off, because you can just put that charger right on top of it and it keeps rolling and boosting you back up to full power. So great tool. I think you all will dig it. Give it a shot. That is the Whoop band, whoop.com. We also have one of our longtime supporters of the show back for this episode. That's Health IQ. We already know that you take care of yourself. Heck, you're going to go out and you're going to get this Whoop band, and that's going to be even more proof that you care about these things. And Health IQ knows that listeners and viewers to this podcast care about themselves, and therefore they are better risks. You all, better risks for Health IQ for life insurance. And what that means is that they can get you lower rates. If you're a master's racer, if you're getting up there, you got a family, you are becoming an adult, you've been an adult but trying to put off that reality for some time, every financial planner, every accountant's going to tell you, hey, life insurance is definitely something that you should look for. And we've got a great deal on it. Since you're a cyclist, you're going to get an even lower rate from Health IQ. Go to healthiq.com. Use the code WAP. I think it's even healthiq.com/WAP. Go there. You take this test. It's about cycling. Y'all are going to ace it. That'll get you qualified. You send them all your information. You can send them your Strava segments. This is something you say, hey, I keep all my stuff on Strava, and now it's going for a good cause. It's helping me get lower rates on my life insurance, and that is through Health IQ. HealthIQ.com/WAP. Speaking of WAP, we're all going to be out in Trek for the Waterloo World Cup. We want you all to be out there as well. Trek CXC, CXCup.com. That'll get you to all the registration information. Either way, we're going to have a big party with all of the wide angle podium hosts out in Waterloo, Wisconsin. And we want you to be there too. The festivities start, heck, they're going to be out there all week, but racing starts on the 20th of September through the weekend. We got the C2, and then the Legends race and all the really fun stuff on Saturday, and then the World Cup on Sunday. The best in the world are going to be there. It's going to be a throwdown. We want you to come out and check it all out. Go to a World Cup race. We can't guarantee these are going to be here every year, and we want you to be to this one, especially since the Wide Angle Podium Network is the first ever podcast network sponsor of a World Cup. Come out, meet us all, hang out at the tent, get some swag. It's going to be a great time, and that's going to be September 2021-22. To get warmed up for that, go to GoCross in Roanoke, Virginia. That's where we're going to be this weekend. We want you to be there too. GoCrossRace.com. Go register for races. Buy some Grimper coffee. Listen to all the shows at WideAnglePodium.com. And listen to me and Elliot Caldwell talk about cyclocross, talk about this upcoming race in Roanoke, and we're talking about it right now.
All right, Elliot, we are already in minute 39 of our cyclocross discussion, so I figured this will probably be the time that we should hit record. But I'll pretend like we just started talking and say, Elliot Caldwell, how's it going?
It's going quite well. It's going really well.
It's been a while since we chat. I was looking on the Skype log as far as recording stuff, and it said you last talked to Elliot over a year ago.
Wow, it's been that long. we've seen each other since then. Yes. We just haven't talked on Skype since then.
That's right. That's right. That's the Skype. But that's always an interesting. It was the same with Powers. It's a good gauge for me of when I've actually like chatted with people last. At least in however official capacity this could be sold as.
Yeah, we talk a lot over the Slack channel and keep the fire burning there, I guess.
That's right. The CXR secret Twitter.
It's more fun than real Twitter, and there are less people being mean. So it's kind of right. It's in some ways it's better for my sanity.
I agree with that, and there is zero politics in there too, which is good.
For sure.
Not that I think most of us would disagree with anything. Just that it's not something you have to have staring in your face.
Yeah, no, it's like the world's burning and we're all on fire and everything's bad, but we don't have to talk about it all over the Slack. Everyone just knows it inherently.
That's right. So we're gonna pretend the same's going on here, and
we are
days away now from the opening of, I believe, cyclocross, UCI cyclocross anywhere. I've been saying North American UCI cyclocross. I guess we could check the calendar. There may be a competing race in Belgium. I know there's one coming up. They started putting that early one in there just to get everybody ready for the World Cups. But if anything, this is the, yes, ties for the this is still officially the opening of UCI cyclocross in Roanoke, Virginia at GoCross. And since
the eyes of the cyclocross world are on Roanoke, Bill. Oh, it's like, it's great. It's really cool.
It is. Yeah. Everybody's staring at the Star City. And we have since, I know Scott Herman and I kind of touched on it, but since that time, the registration has definitely grown. And I think we have a fuller picture. We still may get more entries. Usually you got until about Wednesday, maybe Thursday, to sneak in there as a UCI racer, but you know, there's no day of for these folks. They have to be registered and ready to go. So I think we have a pretty full picture of who we will see in Roanoke, and I thought that'd be a great place to kind of start our discussion and just what we what we are going to see at the beginning of this season, and just you know, just like sort of broad strokes, what sticks out for you coming up here for the start of the season?
Well, the interest, a couple interesting folks on the start list. There's someone over the age of 30 from East Hampton, Massachusetts, who's registered, but it's not Powers. It's Al Donahue. That's one that I thought was kind of funny. I was like, oh, Al's racing. It's keeping the fire burning for Powers in a way. Now,
he's a stand-in.
He's a stand-in, right?
I'm sure he'll be pleased to hear that.
Well, and Lucas Shaw's brother apparently races cross, so bringing some downhill stoke to the UCI field. There are Europeans in the field, one on each day. I'm not sure if they chose they decided from a Euro perspective to only do one day and not both. But Wietse Bozeman's on Sunday, I think, is an interesting addition to the start list, because we saw him, what was it, 4 years ago, 3 years ago at Nittany in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, so you and I, before we start, one of the things that took us some time to figure out is Wietse Bozeman is an interesting story, because it really looks like his last cyclocross races, unless you have some others in there that you could find, were in 2015, where he won both days of Nittany Lion Cross up in Pennsylvania. And I was out there, saw those races, and it was kind of funny because it was one of those things where Nittany has that I hate to say man-made, but they have that mud bog that sort of flows out the bottom of the velodrome that I don't think anybody wants to think about what the mud actually is. So it was a sort of a rainy day, sort of a little bit of a muddy day. And then there was that huge bog in the back. And I talked to him after the race, and he just went on this whole explanation how the mud is different here than it is in Belgium, and was very specific about the kinds of mud. And I was like, I have never heard anything more Belgian, especially right, for cyclocross, than a guy going into this long discussion about the quality of mud.
He brought his mud testing kit so he could tell you exactly. he took a sample back to his hotel. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But actually, he's racing both days. And so is Andreas Lund Andersen. I guess he was the U23 Danish national champion. I keep saying last year, but last season, earlier this year. So those are your tier Euros in the men's field.
Yeah. And it's an interesting one, because you went and looked up his world's result too, and really, you know, just kind of run of the mill when it came to Worlds, just down
mid-pack.
There.
Mid-pack Worlds result.
So he'll be an interesting one to watch. I can tell you from going to Denmark that the weather that he is going to see in Roanoke, or feel, he'll probably see it too, it's going to be that thick, is going to be a little different than what he's used to. And I think Bozeman's also, that to me is going to be the biggest factor that I think some of these non-American racers are going to have to deal with. And it's interesting too, because I came into this, you know, I was telling you earlier how, you know, you're down in Georgia, up here in DC, it was beautiful, just beautiful, still is today, in the 60s, just really great day to go out and ride. And I was checking the weather, and I was like, oh, sweet, you know, we're going to get that kind of weather for Roanoke as well, and people won't, you know, complain about this isn't cyclocross weather because it's 100 degrees. But turns out, I'm looking at the forecast now, we got high of 91 on Saturday and high of 86 on Sunday, so
not
right
bad.
Back up there.
I mean could be worse. I mean it really looks like in the men's field that it'll probably be the carry versus Curtis show. I don't know the expectation of the race organizers, if they really were hoping to get more people traveling. At least in the men's field, it's, other than the two Europeans, it's pretty much mainly sort of mid-Atlantic and then sort of North Carolina, Virginia folks. There's not a big contingent of you know, folks from outside the region traveling. The women's race is a little bit different. So I mean, there's some strong riders, the Liverman brothers, Alex Ryan. I mean, there's some strong North Carolina folks that are going to be out there. Andrew, I never can say his name right. Is Genet? Is that how you say it? From the pony shop?
Oh man, I should know. I'm going to say Genet.
Okay. I'm pronouncing it like Taylor would, like with a bit of French. Yeah. I mean, he's super strong, and you know, he's not just down the road in Asheville. So, I mean, there's a decent amount of local-ish folks for this race. But in terms of looking at the start list and thinking about who's going to push for that win, I guess Eric Thompson too, we should shout him out, from Asheville, again, not too far away from Roanoke. And, you know, he's probably up, he would be looking at the podium or the wide angle podium, highly likely.
Eric's one of those guys, I think, who was there in the mix all last year and probably didn't get the acknowledgement of it as much as other racers. I mean, even I know he was top 10 finish at Nationals, and you just looked around that yellow kit. I mean, he was all over the front of these races, and I think a quiet guy by nature, and just went out there and raced hard and had some great results. Did great at DCCDX as well. Just a fun one to watch, and a guy who, you know, maybe this is it. Maybe he was, you know, in that top five range last year, and he sort of moves up this year.
Yeah, it's always interesting to think about, like, the folks that, you know, had good summers and are kind of ready to come out all guns blazing and again, maybe take that next step up. And I'm not sure what his racing age is, so I'm not sure if he's... I think him and Carey are probably around the same age.
Yeah,
I'm
guessing. That's right, yeah.
That's certainly, prime time to make a run sort of at that. I guess he's already been on Weinagel podiums, but maybe some of those regular podiums as well. So.
Yeah, I think if we look, if we're looking at the men's field, like you said, I think Bozeman's, again, he's such an interesting story there. He was a guy who was on this BKCP Corendon team from like 2015, 2016, then went to the Era Circus team for a couple seasons, and is now back on Corendon Circus, so back on MVDP's team. But it looked like he was more racing road and maybe not racing as much, but is now back in it. Was he was the guy who had Lyme disease, right?
I think so.
Yeah. I think that's what sort of sidelined him for a long time. So maybe this is comeback year. So he's really a wild card in there, but the kind of wild card that we know who is strong and can be at the front of races. The more interesting battle, which I think you already pointed out, is going to be Kerry Werner versus Curtis White. You know, these are two of the top racers last year. Curtis is the Pan Am champ, and just looking at their off season, Kerry spending a lot of time on the mountain bike again, doing, looked like a lot of fun rides, a lot of fun races there. And Curtis looked like, even though he wasn't racing road, definitely was putting in some time in some races where he was putting out big efforts, you know, be it gravel races. I think even some road races in there looked like he was having a lot of fun, but my guess is, just from a top end basis, and especially this early in the season, Curtis comes in here a little stronger to Roanoke.
Yeah, I would take those. I would, whatever odds you would, I would take that. I would take that bet, or I would agree with that bet, not take that bet. I would agree with that bet for sure. Yeah. It is sort of hard to know, I think. And you're on top of this much more, A, because you follow mountain biking a lot more, and you know a lot more folks in that world. And then the sort of unevenness of, of kind of gravel racing. Like, it's really easy to follow crit racing in the U.S. To a certain extent. But I feel like it's a little harder to follow kind of what other folks are doing relative to gravel racing, and kind of the more, I don't want to say they're not unregistered events, but it's a bit more of a wild world when it comes to kind of gravel racing and other off-season type programs versus, again, just because of Athens Twilight and because I have lots of friends that are in the crit world, it's pretty easy to follow those results, whether it's through USA Crits or like the New England Crit Week or whatever it is. Like, it's really easy to get a sense of, because there's just a repetitive nature to that racing. So, I'm definitely interested to see what some of the folks that are doing more mountain biking and gravel racing, those cross racers, kind of how they come into the season. So,
yeah. So looking at what Cross Results has as their race predictor, Who do you think's coming out in the number one spot for the men?
I would guess Bozeman's. I mean, he still has points. He was like, you know, eighth or ninth in Belgian nationals like a year ago or, you know, a year and a half ago. So I'm going to guess he's still number one.
He is number one. We got Bozeman's predicted to win, White second, Werner third. So that's sort of, before I looked at it, that was kind of where I was leaning towards. The aforementioned Eric Thompson coming in fourth. So just like you were saying, still in that wide angle podium spot. And then Travis Liverman in fifth place with Alex Ryan in sixth. And then our Andreas Lund Anderson, no relation to Simon Andreasen.
Different spelling. There's an A or an E missing in there. So
coming in at seven. So a lot of North Carolina in there as well. And that's the thing that I think even I forget is that Roanoke is southwestern Virginia. So it's a shorter drive from Asheville and places like that than it is even from like Richmond or, you know, other place, big populations. It's definitely Northern Virginia. It's a five hour ride from Northern Virginia.
Yeah, I think it's significantly closer to a place like Asheville or Knoxville than it is to anywhere in the rest of Virginia for the most part, I guess. So,
all right, let's we do the men.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anybody? Wonder anybody in there we should take you did mention Walker Shaw racing, right. which I feel like this is some sort of there's some sort of family dynamic going in here that, you know, Yolanda Neff shows up and starts racing downhill when she's in the States with Luca, that now the Shaw family has to go out and race some endurance sports.
Yeah, so. I mean, Taylor said that he's like a legit, you know, legit kind of cross country and cyclocross guy. So, sweet. And I think he raced for one of the collegiate teams down there. I forget which one. Maybe I'm not sure, but maybe I forget. Not Brevard, but something like, you know, one of the he's raced.
Yeah,
collegiate.
Brevard for sure. He raced nationals for Brevard, 23rd in collegiate nationals.
Gotcha.
And 32nd in the the U23. He did the 1-2 race. Yeah,
got it.
Yeah, but cool. definitely up there with in the NCCX series,
which is a quality, and I think folks got a sense of that from Asheville Nationals. But like the North Carolina races, because of all those universities, actually has a pretty good. I mean, it's certainly the deepest fields in the Southeast. So yeah, that series is nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah. All right, let's move over to the women's field. I'm just going to pull up the Sunday. I think they're pretty close.
Yeah,
You know, just looking at the top of the list, again, just like what you were saying with the men, a lot of North Carolina there, the Arensmans, both from Brevard.
Some more travelers, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
With this. Which I think makes this field a very, very, very interesting.
I find the Pennsylvania, man. Pennsylvania will get in their cars. You know, be it Pittsburgh or wherever else. People traveling from Pennsylvania in this. But
Caroline Moniv, you know, coming in from Colorado, and she's been racing on the road with the Points Nokian team out of Oregon. So I think she's, you know, I mean, that's a, obviously, someone who is on a world's podium, so you can't really. I mean, she sticks out in a lot of ways, as does our friend Caroline Nolan from the Rock Lobster team. She won every race, I guess, of the West Coast Cyclocross Points Prestige, which was a very interesting. I read the Cyclocross Magazine article about it, and it was a very interesting setup in that they raced twice a day. I've never really heard of racing twice a day for points. You know, the whole point of this was to get USAC points, I guess, for West Coast racers. But they did a Saturday AM and Saturday PM race for the 1-2-3s. And so Caroline Nolan won. Actually, she didn't win every one. Max Juddelson won every men's race. She won all four out of the five races she won. She got third in the morning on Saturday. So she's coming in, it looks like, already with some racing legs. So, yeah, I'm interested to see how she does. And then, obviously, you've got, not traveling too far, but Rebecca Ferringer, and I guess Sonny Gilbert's traveling far because she doesn't live in Missouri anymore. She lives in Boulder. So yeah, we have some folks on the women's side flying in for sure, which makes it, I think, a very interesting race.
Yeah, my one question for you, I did not read the article, but I think the one that I would be remiss not to ask was if Juddelson raced and won those races on a single speed.
From the pictures, it does not look like he did.
Okay.
I think, you know, it's like a pit bike situation, right? Like he's only racing, he's only riding the single speed in a World Cup if he, you know, has to go in.
I think now he has to start on that bike. That has to be like his A bike at this point. You know, that's how you get that, you know, that sponsorship to stick and really bring it to the next level. He's going to be the first like Red Hook cyclocross star.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure that's the model to continue to follow. I mean, I know there are
since Red Hook may not exist anymore.
Right. Yes. There's that was a quick rise and quick descent maybe. But yeah, no, I think I think all these folks traveling in for the women's side make it again a bit more interesting. And then there's like a few folks that I had never really heard of, or haven't really seen race much, but I know, you know, someone like Jane Rossi, she had a really good nationals last year, if I'm, you know, not correct. There's a woman who is from, I'm going to butcher her last name. It's Anna Megale, Megale from Boise. She's on the Trek Cyclocross Collective. She did all five of those West Coast races as well, and she was third overall, so she got a couple second places and some fourth places. So, and I think she was in maybe a nationals last year and was top 25. So, you know, there's some interesting folks. Just, you know, Erica Zavetta, who again I think she's definitely been on podiums of UCI race, won some UCI races if I'm not correct. So there's just a lot of interesting and you know, the one again, because I read Cyclocross Magazine pretty regularly, you know, Corey Coogan Sissek, you know, I don't think I've ever seen her race on the East Coast. She spent a lot of time in Europe in the last couple seasons. So it'd be cool to see her race in person and kind of see where she's at.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So the points prestige, I think you were talking about Anna Megale. Is that how
you
pronounce it?
Yeah. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely fourth, second, fourth, and second.
Tied on points with a friend of the Wide Angle Podium, and I guess now a host on the Wide Angle Podium, Amanda Nauman.
So that's right. Yeah,
they both had the same number of points, but they were both tied on sort of 16 points for I guess third and fourth place kind of split.
Yeah, and those races, you know, like you said, Carolyn Nolan taking the win there, but Caitlin Bernstein second, Amanda Nauman third, and I'm just picking one of the races here.
Right.
But Anna, we just talked about in fourth, and Sophie Russenberger, who, you know, made a big splash last year, fifth place. Just some fast racing at the front of those. That was a cool idea.
Just to give an interesting shout out with that results, the sixth place overall for the whole weekend.
Yeah.
Vida Lopez de San Roman. She's 14, I believe. And, you know, I'm not sure of her category, but she was sixth on the whole weekend and was 14 years old. So kind of cool.
Yeah.
Racing on a steel SciSip. Kind of a cool, there's a cool picture of her, with a really cool sort of, one by steel bike. So, anyway.
Second place in 2018. She was second place at nationals in This is so funny. It's like in the same year, so I forget that we have. She was second place in the women's 11-12, and then 11 months later, she was second place in the 13-14.
She's legit.
Yeah, yeah.
Beating adults at their own game.
Of course, we know who she came in second to in that race.
Yes.
Well, Ella Brenneman, CXR's Devo.
So the CXR's Devo, they are not racing. They can't race UCI races.
We got two people in this race.
Gotcha. Oh.
Yep. Skylar Bovine's in that race, and then also Libby Sheldon.
Oh, right. Duh, of course. I was focusing on the under the junior.
No, yes, our mentor slot will be represented there, and also a new member Skylar out there also racing in that UCI race. So that's gonna be a fun one.
Cool. Yeah. Awesome.
All right. So,
what does Race Predictor say for that one? I didn't even look.
I was just on there, and then I got all excited and started clicking around other things. So let me go back here. So this is an interesting one. Race Predictor giving a little more weight to Nationals. The most recent Nationals. Sonny Gilbert.
Okay.
With... with 265 points, Farringer coming in at 269 points. So Gilbert and Farringer 1-2, Carolyn Mani up there in third place. Local favorite, Carla Williams, the fourth.
Oh, wow.
And then okay. Carolyn Nolan in fifth. Zavetta, sixth. Hannah Arnsman, seventh. Jane Rossi, Anna Magali, and Caitlin Bernstein filling out the top 10 on the predictor.
Okay. Oh, yeah. So we have another Caitlin Bernstein, another sort of West Coast person flying in. I'm curious if she and Caroline Nolan, and I know Chelsea Weidinger, who also raced Nationals last year from San Francisco, I'm assuming they're going to stay, and I'm guessing Sonny's doing the same. They're just going to stay on the East Coast and go up to Rochester. Roanoke to Rochester is actually a decent drive, but I'm guessing it would make sense to just stay for the week, and if you can, I guess.
Seems like if you can, it really looks like the way that a lot of the folks that are going to be racing, who will be racing full time for the season, the tour starts in Roanoke. You know, check your booking agent and see exactly what he's doing there, but not a bad place to start to get dialed in. And then you take that drive up to Rochester, and then you turn left, and then this is where you have to kind of question what your booking agent is doing, because he's sending you to Iowa and then sending you back to Madison, which seems like a little extra mileage on there. But you know, you can't, the UCI is really not looking at our geography, I think, when they're slotting in dates, and also taking into consideration probably NCAA football.
Yeah, Iowa City, it would be, you would save a couple hours if it was Madison first, that's
right,
for sure.
Yeah.
It's about 800 miles from Rochester to Iowa City, versus Madison is only, you know, actually, you know what? It's because you've got to head north, it's actually around, it's not even that different. It's like 754. So it's, you know, 50 more miles, but nonetheless, it's still a decent amount of time on the road.
Yeah. And then, you know, and then you get to, and then you sort of have to figure out what you want to do after that, but then you're just heading back to the East. Well, and that's what, and I don't want to get into this discussion because we've done it enough. Cause I got a star cross there on the 28th. But then after that is when that's when things just rip apart, and you got like, Gloucester, half people going to Gloucester, other half going to Ozcross. That's going to be really, that's actually, not to get ahead of ourselves, the race weekend, I'm really curious to see who goes where, because I think Ozcross, of course, is going to have a huge draw just because people want to get as many looks as possible of that venue before Worlds comes up in a couple of years.
Yeah, and it's not, I mean, when I first heard about Worlds being there, I thought, oh God, it's really hard to get to. And it's really not, if only because Tulsa is not that far. I mean, they've got a decent sized airport, I guess, in Fayetteville, but Tulsa is a decent sized airport, a bigger airport, and it's pretty easy to fly there and rent a car. Again, it's not exactly around the corner, but it's maybe easier to get to than I thought it was.
I think the Walton presence there and all the other companies that are built up around that is making it easier and easier to get to that part of the world than ever before.
I mean, I live in an SEC college town, and our airport does not have commercial service. Now, granted, we're 60 miles from the busiest airport in the U.S., if not the world. But yeah, I can't fly out of Athens, Ben Epps Airport in Athens, Georgia. It's pretty much impossible. So yeah, they're clearly doing something right there that you can fly in and out of Fayetteville with more or less no problem. And it's not even that. I looked up you know, tickets, and it's not even that expensive considering how small an airport it is. So.
Yeah. Okay, so I think, have we done it for GoCross? One last thing I'd say about GoCross, and I'm just looking at this. This is for all of us mere mortals out there. They have a lot of opportunities to race. They have a lot of opportunities. What we see in cyclocross so much more than other disciplines is people who aren't kids, who are already adults, who are getting into racing, and this is the discipline that they're getting into. So, for instance, they have a 40-plus 4-5 race that only has 16 people in it right now. I mean, if you are looking to start racing cyclocross and you want a race that is not going to be intimidating and it's out there that you can just have fun on a track that's built for cyclocross. I mean, a lot of this is permanent cyclocross features down in Fallon Park. This is the one to do. So this is my plug to go to gocrossrace.com and go register for some of these races. We'd love to see you out there. Elliot will be there. I'll be there. We're going to be cheering you on.
The men's 4-5 has, and this is a decent sized field for sure, but it only has 51 entries, which for a 4-5 field, you know, on the East Coast or whatever. I mean,
at a
UCI race, right. Yeah. At a UCI venue with a quality course. I mean, that's, you know, I think even pre DCCX or pre UCI, when DCCX was part of the super series or what have you, you know, when I was starting out doing Cat 4s because we didn't have 5s then, I mean, we were still with 120 people, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, this is a good way to start out for sure, you know, and again, there's plenty of entries left all across the board.
Yeah, 2 days of racing if you're coming in from out of town, hotels and Airbnb still available and available for not a lot of money. You're not paying. I want everybody to go to Trek as well, but if you haven't gotten your hotel room there yet, you're going to be shelling out a little bit of money. It's nothing like that in Roanoke. You'll have no problem.
And I'll just say overall, having spent, again, a decent amount of my time in a smaller to mid-sized town in the South, like, things are just generally a little bit cheaper. Food, beer, you know, I mean, it's all going to be quality stuff, but you're not going to be paying through the nose the way you think you might if you travel to, again, I love DCCX. Obviously, it's the race that's closest to my heart and closest to where I grew up. But, like, you know, traveling to DC is not, you know, it's not always the cheapest venture. But something like this is, it's going to be really affordable to kind of get there, get settled, get a beer, get some food. So
and also good food as well. The one thing, you know, I went to law school up in Lexington, Virginia, so Roanoke was our big town. That was the big city.
That was the big city.
And it's changed so much since then in a good way. I mean, it's almost it looks a lot more like what Richmond or even Asheville looks like, where you got a lot of cool, quirky places to go. You know, it's a really neat town. So that's if you can make it down there. Limited time now, but hope to see you all for GoCross. All right, what do we got next on our agenda? Ooh, I'm going to throw you. I threw out to Twitter. I'm calling an audible here. Threw out to Twitter just about if there are any questions for us. I had meant to do this earlier. I did it just as we were recording, so they're coming in. Fellow wide angle podium host, Doug McClintock from the gravel lot wants to know what we think the biggest domestic team shakeup has been and how it will affect the season. Any thoughts on that?
I mean, I think I'm not sure it's a shakeup, but I think Gage Hecht and Lance, hate it being on the same, having a team together. Will be interesting. I think that's an interesting wrinkle just to, you know, we all know cyclocross in some ways is like there are team tactics, but sometimes there's not team tactics. And so they're obviously good friends from racing on the road together and have worked together a lot. So I'm kind of curious what that does to the men's field because clearly, I mean, you've got, you know, well-established elites like, you know, Hyde and Curtis White and all that. But the two of those guys working together, I mean, you've got a podium from last year's Elite Nationals and then U23 cross and road national champion. Is he crit too? No, it was just he won the road race.
Lance won the road race. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, those are two incredibly, incredibly strong racers. So I'm kind of curious what that means. Maybe it just means they've got a place to race for the year, or, you know, hopefully longer than that in terms of a team. But I'm curious if they're actually, if they actually work together more, and kind of how that could shake up the field. I'm trying to think of a historical memory of, like, you know, two teammates that really do. I mean, I guess, again, Curtis and Stephen Hyde. I mean, I guess maybe they have some team tactics and teamwork going on. But to me, that's an interesting wrinkle from a team perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we'll ever see the days like we had seen earlier. You know, you're talking about the Cannondale cyclocross team when that was just completely loaded back in the Tim Johnson and Powers. And who else was on that team?
Well, Driscoll was on
Driscoll,
it as well.
Yeah, Driscoll was on there. Shoot, Ryan Trabone was on there at one time for a while. I mean, it just was like who's who of cyclocross on the men's side. And they definitely, you know, came in with almost a road racing mentality of who's going to attack when and try to just light up the field and then loosen it up. Usually at the expense of Jonathan Page if he was in town or in the country for a race. We don't have that anymore, but I do like what you're saying just with these pairs, sort of these duos that are set up now. Yeah, I mean, we saw even at Nationals until they started racing against each other just to get that lead. I mean, Curtis and Steven are, you know, Steven's just in Curtis's ear the whole time, those first couple laps. And they're just, it's not like either of them are trying to get away from one another, which completely changes how you can race. Right. I mean, then you're better at the end of a race, 'cause you're not getting crushed in the beginning, trying to get away with this guy. So that dynamic is definitely true. We saw the same thing with these young guns, like Lance and Gage, who were teaming up on the older guys at like Cincy and just really just drilling them one after another. So they were almost working like they were teammates there. So I agree. I think it's going to be really fun. And there's just a huge amount of firepower with those. I would say as far as team shakeups though, and it's not really a shakeup, it's just kind of how it's built. I'll look at the Alpha Bicycles team in Colorado. You know, they had Gage and they had Katie Klaus. Gage now on this Donnelly team, Katie now on the Cannondale team, and that they now have, they got Brandon Fix is going to have a good year, Turner Ramsey in there. You know, they're a younger team, and I think that's kind of their goal. They're a developmental team, but definitely losing Hecht and Klaus changes sort of the face of that team, in having people always in the biggest races with a chance to win them. The other thing I will mention, just going back to Cannondale, Katie Klaus joins that team, Spencer Petrov no longer on that team. So that's a big change there as well. I mean, you had, you know, sort of going against what I just said, is if Spencer were on that team and he were healthy, that would have been a trio that would have been tough to deal with. If you had Spence and Curtis and Steven all at the front of a race together.
Yeah. Well, so I'm guessing with Katie Keough being in Europe most of the year, it'll be on the women's side with the Cannondale team, it'll be Katie Klaus, and that's pretty much it in that field, right? There's no other women on that team.
Yeah, it's a four person elite team
on the elite team, right? Yeah. The Devo team is a whole other thing. So
yeah, and I mean, and that it's, you know, where do you draw the line there? Because you got, at least on the men's side, you have Lane Mayer, you have Alex Morton, I think, who's still on that team. I mean, you have these super strong younger guys still sort of up and coming on that, wearing the Cannondale colors.
Right. I mean, it's a development team, but they're development folks that are literally at the front of any race that they're in, more or less, which is, you know, a good thing, a good place to be. But in a lot of ways, it feels more like a not say minor league team, but it's development, but it's definitely folks that are proven in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. Let's see, going through here, any other good questions? I think we already talked about Go Cross and yeah, let's What else we got planned here?
Well, I mean, I think we were going to maybe talk a little bit about the early kind of Eurocross, potentially who's going to be at the World Cups and sort of what does the fields, I mean, the men's field obviously is going to look very different without Wout still injured and Matthew focusing on Road Worlds. So what's that men's field look like? I think that'll be an interesting kind of, and this is all sort of, you know, conjecture. I guess we don't have the start lists yet, but I'm assuming because Trek is still a big sponsor, we're going to see the full, you know, Trek, you know, the Lions out in both World Cups. So that is who I'm looking towards in the men's field, I guess. But
yeah, the question for me, what'll be curious, and I don't know, I mean, I know it was announced and maybe we can look back and see, but Lucinda Brand, when does her contract start? And is she going to be in Waterloo racing for the Lions there? That would be a really interesting one.
I think I'm looking it up right now. I think she doesn't start until
probably January.
January 1st, 2020. Yeah. So we'll
have to wait a year for that one.
Well, we'll see her on the line at Sven's in Sven's backyard, you know, in the Trek kit racing a Trek bike, you know, at the what's it the GP Svenness.
Yep. So. Yep. In Ball.
Her first race.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, I think you're right as far as the U.S. World Cups go. Tone Aerts, you know, they definitely have to put him at the top, right? I mean, isn't he the one to beat at this point? He definitely was the strongest one behind Vanderpool whenever he showed up last year. And we talk about Lars Vanderhaar every year. Is this the year he's gonna come back?
I mean, I would like to say so, but I think all result signs point to probably not. I mean, again, you know, maybe on the podium, you know, maybe pushing for some wins. But I think if Tone Aerts is in a race, I haven't looked at their. I have never done the head to head on cross results with the predictor, but I imagine it's you know pretty one sided with Tone. At least the last like what two or three seasons. So. But you never know. Maybe Lars did a big gravel program and he's ready to go this after a summer of gravel grinding. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. I think it's going to be really tough. I mean, just looking back at the worlds from last year, you know, you got Vanderpool and Van Aert 1 and 2, they're gone. Tone Aerts, the Michael Van Toren out. Who should probably be up there again? Lawrence Swick, then Vanderhaar, Quinton Hermans. The usual suspect. The interesting thing is going to be like down there at 10 and 11 is when the new road stars show up. You got Johnny Vermeersch and Tim Merlier, who both have just on it. I mean, Tim Merlier, I think, just won today again in a sprint. He's like he's gonna be the next guy who skips out on cyclocross, I think.
Well, and I think this was mentioned. I'm not sure it was on Twitter or maybe just a conversation on the CX Air's Slack Twitter channel. But you know, the consolidation of Euro teams and sort of maybe are we gonna start seeing more individual programs from European sort of racers? I don't know. I mean, again, I think a little different on the men's versus the women's side for different reasons. But, you know, it sounds like there's basically two major teams left on the European side. I'm just curious to see who's going to be, again, for the men and women, but certainly more from the men in some ways, curious to see who's going to be there, what team they're on, and are there people that are not going to be there because they just don't have the support?
I think that there is a, and I've actually heard of this, but there is a bit of hand wringing going on about the future of cyclocross, even in Belgium. And if we are at the top of that bell curve now, I mean, similar to what we've seen in the U.S. just in the amateur ranks, where it looks like the last couple years, our participation started to plateau and now maybe even going down a little bit, you know, with people looking at gravel and at just doing their own thing. In Belgium, I think they're looking at TV ratings. And as much as we are stoked about and applaud the rise in women's ratings, the component that I don't think enough attention was paid to was the fall in ratings for men's and viewership for men's racing. And you can say, oh, well, that's the Vanderpool effect or whatever else, that people don't want to watch it anymore. But I think it may be bigger than that. And part of it is what you're talking about, is that there's not this just free for all competition anymore. And it's really just, you know, too consolidated.
Yeah, no, for sure. And the degree to which, and again, I've never spent any time over in sort of the Belgian Netherlands cross world, but the degree to which Sven, I think, really drew a lot of viewers, I think, is probably something. I mean, folks want to focus on Wout and Matthew van der Poel kind of dominating, but the degree to which I think a lot of people probably watch simply to watch Sven race is probably, that's a couple percentage points bump right there, right? Like, some people just after Sven retired, and some of those folks from that generation, you know, obviously Niels and folks leaving, I think, you know, maybe just weren't as interested because they, not just because Wout and Matthew were dominating, but maybe just they didn't know them that well, you know? And I think it is a personality driven sport. NASCAR lost a lot of people when Dale Earnhardt died. There's no question in my mind. Even if they weren't big, maybe they were big Dale Jr. fans as well, but I bet you there were people that just didn't watch it for a bit or stop watching altogether because they knew that person and that's why they watched. They wanted to watch Dale Earnhardt go against, you know, Jeff Gordon every week, and without that, they maybe said, I'll watch something else.
I mean, look at golf. Look at Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
Once Tiger disappeared, you know, golf struggled, you know, and every time he comes back, it's this big deal again. And I think you're right. And I think the other thing that it's the personalities, but it's also the racing. So Sven, when he was racing, when Niels was racing, it was a different style. Sven is a very calculated racer. He was a guy that would not attack, you know, those two would get out front, but nobody tuned out because A, you didn't know who was going to win. You know, Niels would look awful and turn in these great races, and Sven was this tactician that would wait until the last lap before he put in a move, so you were sucked into it the whole race. You know, you can call it a criticism, or you can just call it that he's, you know, as he says, he's paid to win bike races. Vanderpool doesn't play that game. He's like, no. I'm stronger than you. I'm stronger than you for 60 minutes in the second lap. If I have the opportunity to go, I'm going to go. And here's what I will say to you. What I think we would love to see. And again, no, I want him to, if he can win, he should go out and win. He shouldn't be like changing it because it makes it a better race. But what I think all of us who started watching short track mountain biking saw was what we really wish we could see in cyclocross. We didn't care that he still won. It was great. But it was these last lap attacks in these short track mountain bike races against, you know, Nino and against Avancini that you're like, oh, this is just amazing racing. And we didn't get that in cyclocross anymore because the race was over and there was still 30 minutes left.
Not, you follow mountain biking more than I do, and you know that world better than I do. But so you wouldn't want to change a UCI rule on time of a race based solely on one person. So clearly you're not doing this just because of Matthew van der Poel, but the fact that he does the short track races and cross are the short track mountain bike races with the UCI at the UCI level, you know, those World Cup weekends, is that the best, one of the best arguments you can point to for making everybody race 50 minutes across the board on the UCI level in cross, you think, relative to the excitement of those races?
I think so. I think that there, you know, and I understand that, you know, the argument against it is that you still have the cross country race that happens the next, you know, 2 days from then.
Right.
So you're still getting that premier event, and this is more of just the appetizer. But it is the most exciting racing that they've put out there. And one of the reasons that race exists is because the UCI wanted to keep interest in the sport and make sure that if you were having a World Cup event, you had two huge events. And, you know, it got off to a shaky start that first year in Alpstadt. People really weren't sure what they were looking at, and they didn't even televise it. But after that, once it got on TV, I think that's the thing that people were tuning in to.
And, you know, I've said it before, but also if you look at what they've done with, and to go with your argument that I agree with, yeah, let's do 50 minutes for everyone. If you look at what they did to cross-country XCO Olympic cross-country racing, it's exactly the same thing. These used to be 3+ hour races. They were what we would consider a marathon race now. You know, marathon races used to be 24 hours. Now they're, you know, 3 or 4 hours. And cross-country races are 1 hour 15. You know, doing 5, 6, 7 laps on a track. You used to never see that in cross-country racing. That's a cyclocross race with fat tires.
Right.
And it's exciting. And you're getting exciting races. And I think that, yeah, some of that should be taken into consideration when you're looking at cyclocross. And nobody in these mountain bike races is taking a lap off. You know, you take a lap off and you're done. And that's kind of my complaint. And I know a lot of other people's with men's cyclocross at 60 plus minutes is that you get to, you know, 2 to go and there's that detente. And everybody sits up when it comes to the finishing stretch and everything regroups and then they go again.
Right. And it's obviously, you know, cyclocross isn't a stage race, but a lot of people are doing, you know, you're doing double weekends. In the U.S., you might have 2 races in the same place. And then in Europe, it might be, like a super prestige one day and a World Cup one, or I guess a World Cup, they don't do this. But, you know, there might be weekends where you have...
Oh, there'll be a World Cup and a series race on the same weekend. Yeah, for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
So, again, you know, particularly for the men's side, it seems like, I don't know, maybe 10 or 15 extra minutes wouldn't make that much of a difference, but... having a little bit more left in the tank would seem to be encourage more exciting racing both days versus, I mean, I guess the World Cup's always been sort of 60 plus one lap, right, for the men. So you're cutting it down a decent amount. That could actually create more exciting racing at the Super Prestige or at the DVV or whatever the other race is for that weekend. So,
Yeah. And I think that, you know, just going back to where this conversation started, just to bring it full circle. When you looked at Sven, and we were talking about Niels, but he also had Bart Wellens out there. He also had guys like Tom Mason coming up. He had guys like Lars Vanderhaar later in his career who were coming up there. And then eventually even Vanderpool and Wout. And all of these guys were racing against each other and racing together. And I'll get called out on this because I'm not looking at the stats right now. But really... how many, other than Vanderpool getting it wrong and having to chase back in Worlds and not able to get back to Wout, how many times have there really been those, you know, last lap, almost right, sprint finishes between Wout and Vanderpool? And I don't think there are many. So no. I think that dynamic just doesn't exist with that pair.
Right, which in a lot of ways, again, I think if there's any argument to why the women's race in particularly in Europe and in the U.S. as well, but certainly the women's races in Europe and at the World Cup level and at all these other races, I mean, screw putting them at 8 a.m., which I know they don't do anymore, but like these should be the hallmark races because they're way more exciting. There's a lot more question marks in the air going in. I mean, you've got, you know, 10 people that could win the race on any given day, depending on who shows up, and again, having Katie Compton and Katie Keough sort of racing basically the whole Eurocross schedule, I think will give something. And for folks in the U.S. that aren't already following Eurocross, I think this will give an even better reason. I mean, because I'm really excited to see what Katie Keough can do with a full season there, particularly as the conditions get worse, as it gets deeper into the winter. So.
Yeah, and looking at the women's field, and I guess the what we started here is, you know, what we see coming up on the horizon for the European racing. You know, let's look back at Worlds that happened in February. You know, I think Sané Kant once again has to prove that she's the best cyclocross racer out there. You know, there's always. I think for somebody who has won as much as she has, she doesn't get the respect she always deserves. Maybe that has changed now because this was a huge win for her in a field that cannot be argued against. You know, she beats Lucinda Brand, who came in second.
pit controversy aside, you know, whatever may have happened there, I think that that was a legit win for her. Beats Mariana Voss, who started out this season just huge, you know, took some time out, came off, was still fast. We see her now, she's like flying again. So I don't know if Voss has announced what her cyclocross plans are going to be for this year. Hopefully she's back in there. But just yeah, looking down from there, fourth place, Denise Betsema. I'm assuming that one's going to result's going to disappear soon.
Right. Yeah.
You know, which means that Anna Marie Wurst moves up, and then Yolanda Neff, which I think is an exciting one. We're going to see her out in Trek racing. She's going to do world champs in Mount St. Anne, go to Snowshoe, and then head to Jingle and to Madison for the Trek or Waterloo. And I think that'll probably be the, you know, she'll probably take a break after that, but that's going to be really fun. And she's going to be flying. And then right after that, and I think this is something that we need to put more of a spotlight on, because you just said it, Katie Keough, seventh place in Worlds, you know, really just up there with the cream of the crop in the world. And I think this is the perfect time for her to do this. I think she's right there and she could really have a breakout year.
And it's, again, maybe this is just me and and my sense of age, but if you had asked me what Katie Keough's age was without looking, I would have said maybe 30 or 31. She's right. 20. I mean, at least according to race age from Worlds, she's 27.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a year older than Yolanda Neff, and yeah, only and 2 years younger than Sana Kant. So like that, I mean, that is way younger than I would have thought. And this is perfect time for her to be in Europe and kind of testing that out. So.
Yeah, so as you said, you know, exciting racing in the women's field last year, and it's the kind of, you know, both fields are still awesome, but yes, you don't have that Vanderpool effect. You don't have one person in here winning 32 races in a year, so it's just not that kind of domination, which means that you're really looking at anybody to win. And in this field, this is the one that when, you know, we're all up in Waterloo and the whole wide angle podium network has convened, because Elliot, we are the first ever podcast network to sponsor a World Cup cyclocross event. I will say a World Cup event of any kind.
Right.
That this is going to be the race that we are just stoked for, because I think most everybody's going to be there and they're going to be flying, and it's really up for grabs. And boy oh boy, if Katie Keough could come off with a win in either Iowa, which she's, you know, of course already proven herself at, or a Trek, that'll just be tops.
Yeah, and it's interesting just looking at, again, some of the looking at Worlds results. I mean, we've had a few folks who are retired, I guess, both Helen Wyman, I guess two riders from the UK retired, right? So there's kind of an opening there, and I'm guess, you know, Celine Alvarado and some other U23 folks that will race at that kind of elite level for most of the year or a lot of the year, that'll be an interesting kind of, you know, mix in there. And again, people like Katarina Nash, right? That I don't know what her schedule is going to be like. I'm guessing that Voss and Lucinda Brand, I think the road Worlds course in Yorkshire both seems to suit them pretty well. So I imagine they'll be focused very much on that until certainly suits Marianne Voss. So I'm curious to see kind of when they're going to dip back in. I mean, for all we know, we might not see Lucinda Brand until January 1st, you know, really racing seriously, or maybe the curse period, I guess, for her. So it could be a little more wide open in those first couple World Cups.
So you know how cyclocross now since Wout and Vanderpool have had all the success on the road, that cyclocross now is the everybody thinks that this is what the world tour has to do in the off season to be able to be good for road season because of the success of these two guys. They're like, oh well, obviously we need to, you know, do this off season training, this cyclocross, to be able to do well in on the road. I'm going to take that same concept, look at Katarina Nash, and if she does well in these World Cups in Iowa City and also in Waterloo, it's going to mean that the women's field then has to go do enduro after this, and she just finished up the EWS race
She raced the Enduro, the World, or it's not a World Cup. Is it a World Cup? It's a series. UCI series, but not a EWS. Right. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
The one in California.
Right. Trucking. So she was actually home, you know, but still in there.
She got to drive from her home to the actual course.
Full on Tahoe EWS. Ended up in the top 20. So that's going to be it. If she crushes in these World Cups, everybody, we're going to see the whole field out there racing Enduro next year.
I saw a video of the Rock Garden from one of the stages, and I was kind of mind blown that people were doing that on non downhill mountain bikes. But again, I'm scared of descents and big rocks, which is why I race cyclocross and
And for Nash, I was looking at it. It didn't look like she really was armored up much. Had the full face helmet on, but other than that, just sort of going into it, you know, knees and elbows exposed. So she's a tough one. All right, last thing that we have here on the agenda that we can do or don't want to do, just see if you got anything in mind. You had the breakout domestic rides for the year. Who are you thinking about? North America.
Yeah, I mean, this was partly just kind of looking out of the both the Rochester and the Roanoke start lists.
I
think just looking at the, you know, I'll go based off of the racing that we have seen, and that really is that West Coast points prestige, which again I think is a really cool concept, and I hope other folks do this before or help other folks do this again. But yeah, Caroline Nolan, I think, you know, Amanda Nauman, who you know, I think is probably looking to improve on some performances from last year. So the two of them, I think, would be interesting to keep an eye on. And again, I'm going to butcher the name, but Anna Magale. I mean, she, again, those are three people right there that seem to be starting off the season with some good results. So I'd say them on the women's side. The men's side, I'm super, super curious, and this isn't breakout at all, but I'm definitely curious to see kind of what Lance Haidt does in the elites with Gage. And we all know Gage's quality, but I think he's going to be pushing the front. I mean, he won Reno Cross last year, right? So he's not an unknown quantity, but I'm definitely curious to see kind of where he fits in sort of in the week in, week out, sort of the elite field. Those are sort of some folks I'm thinking. And again, I think we talked about this. Eric Thompson, I think, maybe, you know, pushing up towards that, you know, not just the wide angle, but the regular three-person podium in a lot of the bigger races. I think there's uncertainty in terms of teams and sort of where folks' fitness is at. Some folks dealing with injuries last year on the men's side, thinking like Tobin and some other folks, maybe other folks not racing anymore. But I think someone like Eric Thompson, who's kind of, he's proved, you know, he's pushed himself in Europe, and I think probably is going to have some big breakout results this year.
Yeah, I think you are right in those picks, especially on the women's side. It's gonna be really fun to see those folks out there, especially what I was thinking about. And maybe this is more just because I remember Gage Hecht last year at Rochester coming down the little asphalt sections on there in his time trial tuck and just like in the big ring and just crushing it. When you talk about Haidt and you talk about Gage and all the racing that they have done on the road, both of these races kind of set up for that. They're pretty wide open. You get, you know, your speed limits are really in Rochester or back in that wooded section and maybe the up and down twists on the go cross with the steps, that section for there. But other than that, I think that these are going to be like hot weather, full throttle races, that it's just going to be the engines there. And that's why it's, you know, it's always fun with guys like Curtis White in there as well. I think this is going to be one for the diesels for these first two rounds.
And Clara, if I'm not correct, Clara Hansinger is now she's no longer U23, right? So she's going to be racing elites. And again, you know, the strength that she has and what she's shown sort of not just domestically, but, you know, like at Worlds last year, it wouldn't surprise me if in her first year, she's really pushing for not just podiums, but wins. I've never looked at, I haven't looked at cross results to kind of see where she's, what she's done up against people like Sonny Gilbert or Rebecca Ferringer, in races that they've done. But again, I would not be surprised to see her on podiums and even winning C2s and potentially even C1s at the elite level this year. So,
well, I will tell you this. So her racing age is 23. So yeah, U23 no longer eligible for that. Looking at cross results, top victims for Clara Hansinger: Rebecca Farringer, Courtney McFadden, Raylan Nuss, Sammy Runnels, Sonny Gilbert, Katie Klaus. So top nemesis: Ellen Noble, Magley Rochette, and Katie Keough. So I think you are right in your rundown there. She's right there in the mix and already at the top of North American racing. And I think she's going to make a big splash. Definitely racing, and I mean she's already raced elites, but hopefully we'll see her more everywhere. Every week. Yeah. I'd love to see her every week. I think she's going to be. That's a good call.
Would she race? I mean, obviously she can't race she'll be racing in the World Cups at because they don't do U23 women at the World Cups. And she's not U23 anymore anyway. But I'm always curious how that selection works relative to somebody that's jumping up from U23 to elites. Do they, that's a little bit above my pay grade or my level of understanding of how that works. But we will see her, I'm guessing, at those World Cups.
Yeah. And you even look at, like the last World Cup she did, Hoogerheide, top 20 finish, ahead of people like Yolanda Neff and Floor Nagenstan, so right up there, her and Farringer actually rode together in that race. So she's going to have a good year. That's a good pick. I like that.
Yeah. She's already at the pointy end and she's been a U23 this whole time. So that's impressive.
Yep. All right, Elliot, I think we did it.
Yeah, we did. And we'll see each other very soon, which is kind of cool. Everyone back at the band's all getting back together.
Yeah, for sure. We will all be in Roanoke, as I said before. Hope you all can be there too. Go to gocrossrace.com, get yourself registered, and come hang out with us for the weekend. And yeah, it'll be awesome to see you in person, and looking forward to that. And thanks for coming on and chatting for this episode of Cyclocross Radio.
Thanks for having me.